Well, it is great to be back in the pulpit after a week off. It's a funny thing. You long for a week off every now and then by the time that Sunday gets around and you didn't grapple with it all week, you're thinking, well, I wish I was up there. So it's good to be back. And now I'm back and I get to preach on everyone's favorite subject today. If you've kept up with where we are in the Gospel of Mark, you already know. Today we get to talk about giving. You get to think about giving. It's just because it's the text, you know. I can't not talk about this. You'd notice if I skipped something. This text is not about your giving of your time. It's not about your giving of your efforts in prayer. It's not about your giving of energy in some other form of Christian service. This text is an example of us, of a lady who gave money. And we're going to think together today as we look at it about the goal of your giving. It's a question that you may have asked in one form or another, or quietly wondered about when some pastor spoke on money. Why should I give? Or why should I give more? Or why should I give anything? It's my money. I worked hard for it. I've got my own pressing needs and, you know, I'm one of the poor. Why should I give? If you've wondered that, or if there has arisen inside you a secret inner groan at the thought of one more sermon on money, I think that this text may surprise you. And I think it will certainly instruct all of us about what our lives ought to be like, about what our Lord desires in us. And hopefully we'll all find great encouragement in it. Let's start, though, with the text itself. And we'll get to the goal of giving. The text is Mark 12, verses 41 through 44. Mark 12, 41 through 44. And he sat down, this he refers to Jesus, and he sat down opposite the treasury and began observing how the people were putting money into the treasury. And many rich people were putting in large sums. A poor widow came and put in two small copper coins, which amount to a cent. Calling his disciples to him, he said to them, "Truly I say to you, this poor widow put in more than all the contributors to the treasury, for they all put in out of their surplus, but she out of her poverty put in all she owned, all she had to live on." Now we need to get into our minds what's happening, this scene at the temple, because it's so different from the way our worship happens. It's so different from anything that's happening anywhere in the world today. This was the week of Passover. Jerusalem was the center of worship for the entire nation. All of the sacrifices happened in Jerusalem at the temple. All of the worship took place at the temple complex, which is where Jesus was. And this particular week, thousands of new people had come into Jerusalem in order to participate in the Passover festivities. And the temple was the central place of worship for everything. And so even though it was a very large area, it was also very crowded as people continued to come into Jerusalem for this week. Jesus had been teaching in the outer court of the temple. It was around the periphery of everything else. It was called the court of the Gentiles. It was a place where Gentiles were allowed to come, and they were allowed to be on the turf of the temple for the purpose of prayer. They could come no further than this court. This is where Jesus cleared out the money changers who had taken over that place of prayer and made it a place to take advantage of people who were coming to worship. He cleared them out. He wouldn't allow them to do that anymore. He stopped all the traitors from coming through, and he began to teach against hypocrisy. And he fielded questions from the hypocrites who didn't appreciate his cleaning things up. Well, now he has moved on in one more section, out of the court of the Gentiles into the court of the women. He moved through one of the gates there, Gentiles were not allowed to go through these gates, but Jewish men and women could go through them, and then women could go no further than this next section, so it was called the Court of the Women. And this was where the treasury was. You could bring your offering here. There were 13 receptacles all around this very large court. They were called shofar. You know that thing you blow? It's a trumpet, and these things were shaped like a trumpet. And so they called them trumpets, I guess, or shofar. And there were 13 of them, and you just walked up and put your money in. It's difficult to be completely inconspicuous about this because you got to walk up to it, and most of the money is coin. And so people can kind of tell if they're really watching what you're doing. You can sort of hide it. And people just, as they came for worship, they brought their offering and they put it in. This was a free will offering that went into these things. And this is the place where Jesus sat down to observe the worshipers come and give their gifts. He sat down opposite one of these receptacles, one of these offering bins, and watched people come and give. Verse 41 says he sat down opposite the treasury and began observing how the people were putting money into the treasury. So he watched them give, and he's watching how they do it. He's observing their gifts and their manner of bringing them. Doesn't comment on what their manner was, probably covered the whole spectrum, but he's watching. And he sat down, so he's watching for a while. People are giving. And many of these people had amounts of money that would blow most of us away, that would intimidate us. Large sums. They were rich people, the text says. They had a lot of money and they were giving a lot of money. And Jesus is just watching, taking all this in. And then along comes this poor widow woman. Now her situation in life stands in extreme contrast to the other people that Jesus had been watching, who had happened by while he's sitting there. She's poor. And verse 42 literally begins this way, and came one, a widow, destitute. This Greek word used to describe her poverty means a person who is completely dependent on others for his or her existence, survival. This word would not be used for you, if you were so poor that you had to decide whether to pay Visa down a little bit this month or pay MasterCard down a little bit this month, or whether all you could hope to do this month is pay the minimum payment on both of them. That's not this kind of poor. This lady was way past having those kinds of options. She's poor the way a beggar is poor. She's got nothing. She's destitute. And she comes up and puts into the temple treasury two small copper coins. And because Jesus knows everything, Jesus knows this is all she has in liquid assets, and she puts it all in. She put in the smallest, least valuable coins in the system of Greek currency. And Mark immediately gives us the exchange rate in terms of Roman currency, so that his original readers would have grasped immediately what the value of this gift was, because they would have understood the Roman coin that he named. Both of the names for the coins are usually translated in English Bibles into English monetary units, which creates an awful lot of confusion. You think about the exchange rates and trying to think of dollars and yen and euros and what that does to you, and then you imagine doing that with a coin you've never heard of. That's what the translators are up against here. And so, depending on the translation you have, you get all sorts of interesting stuff in this verse. Two mites make a farthing. Two mites, which make a quadrans. The quadrans is actually transliterated. That's the name of that Roman coin. Two copper coins, which amount to a cent. Two very small copper coins, worth only a fraction of a penny. And two small coins, which make a penny. I just looked at the most popular translations. The challenge that we have here is that monetary values don't translate into names of other monetary units, do they? If nobody knows what a yen is, you can't call it a dollar and really communicate what's there. But the translators have got to do something, and so they try. But We need to figure out what's going on here, because Jesus observed it. Jesus commended it. Jesus thought it was worthy to call his disciples over and give a life lesson from it. And Jesus preserved it so you could know whatever the lesson is here. So what do these coins mean? Since most of us don't know what a lepta is, and most of us don't know what a Roman quadrant is, the translators have to try. But we need to dig a little deeper. Now, fortunately for us, Mark gives the exchange rate, this amount of money that she brought, which is a point of this passage. It's explicitly stated two ways. It's easy enough for us to pin down with a little work because God preserved for us the exchange rate. Now, the quadron that Mark equates it to, these two little coins were worth one quadron. And that we know the value of, because it was a well-known Roman coin, and in the Roman system, Caesar set the value. It's kind of like our minimum wage law. This is how much you have to pay. This is how much you do pay. This is what this coin is worth, basically, is what he said. And the quadron was worth 1/64th of a denarius, and the denarius was one day of labor for unskilled labor. So if you're working in the vineyard for one day, you get a denarius. And this gift that she gave was worth 1/64th of that. So to know what this amount was, you got to figure out what a day of unskilled labor is worth. If it's minimum wage, $5.15 an hour, she gave 64 cents. If you can't hire anybody for that and you got to pay $80 for a day of hard work, she gave $1.56. No, she gave $1.25. I read the wrong number. $1.25. 64 cents in English, in American money. It wasn't 2 cents, but it wasn't much. It wasn't less than a penny. But you get the idea that this woman didn't have much. I mean, it's hard for us to grasp this. Everything that she had that she could convert to money at this time in her life was worth far less than $2. Probably less than $1 in our monetary system. That's poor. This is what she had to her name. This is what she had to live on. This was what she could buy food with that day. Not much. Now, she could have kept it all. It was a free will offering. She could have bought something. Can't get much, but you could get a little something to eat for that. Wouldn't fill you up, but it's better than nothing. And since she had the Greek coins, she could have put one in and kept the other, and she might have still gotten a piece of bread out of it. But she put them both in. Everything she had to live on. Put them into the treasury and walked away with nothing. Now, Jesus had been sitting and watching for a while. If it had been a momentary pause, he wouldn't have sat down and he wouldn't have seen many people bringing large sums of money. So he watched a lot of people go by. He watched the way they put it in. He watched what they put in. He knew what they were putting in. But now, when this lady comes by, Jesus suddenly calls the disciples to himself from wherever they are milling around him. And he says, "Come here, guys." Now look at verse 43. Calling the disciples to him, he said to them, "Truly I say to you, this poor widow put in more than all the contributors to the treasury." And it's likely that that means all of them combined. The language certainly leaves open for that. "This poor widow put in all more than all the contributors to the treasury, for they all put in out of their surplus. But she, out of her poverty, put in all she owned, all she had to live on." So Jesus commends this woman, calls the disciples to himself to give the lesson, because there's something important about this gift. The commendation of this woman's gift stands in such stark contrast to those large sums of money. There's something here we need to get. There's a goal of our giving that is in this text, and we need to understand it Now, we tend to think of giving in very practical terms, and that's okay to a point. Stuff costs money. Jesus does not criticize the people who are bringing large sums of money. He's not saying they were evil for doing that. They should have given. They had something and they brought a free will offering, and that's a good thing. Everybody's supposed to do that. Nobody can fail to bring an offering week after week, month after month, and be what they ought to be as a Christian. God has provided you wealth, you ought to give it. You ought to give from it. And the wealthy have unique opportunities to fund things. Large sums of money can make things happen that some of us just don't get to do. So there is a practical dynamic to ministry. You can't get past the math. Stuff costs money. You know, it just does. But I want you to hear me well today. If you don't hear anything else, I'm about to get to the point. John MacArthur says every sermon ought to have at least one point, and this one does. Hear me well. That practical aspect of giving is not what this text is about. Even though there were people who were bringing large sums, that helped. That's not the point of this passage, and that's not the goal of your giving. Having this church or some other ministry obtain large sums of money is not the reason that you need to give of the wealth that God has given you. Having you be able to bring an amount of money that if people knew about it, they would go, wow, is not the point of your giving. It's not about buying cool stuff. It's not about having big budgets. If the church ever gets the point of this text, the universal church, any individual church, if we get the point of this text, those practical things are never an issue because they take care of themselves. You don't have to worry about them. So the point of this passage is not about you giving it up so somebody else can have the good stuff. If that were the point, somebody else would have to be the illustration, wouldn't they? It's less than $2 that Jesus commended. It didn't help anything practically. Nobody got rich on this. No grandiose ministry was funded by this woman's gift. If the point of your giving was the money, Jesus would have called the disciples over before this lady showed up. Because plenty of rich people had already been by. Our attention would have been called to one of those people with the big bucks, if that were the point. Her gift was not enough to help in any practical way with the functioning of any ongoing ministry. It just wasn't. There was no real financial gain for anybody in that kind of gift. And yet, this is the gift that Jesus was visibly excited about. So the primary point of your giving is not that the church can function. If you do get the point, the church will function. We won't have to worry about it. Now, I made you wait a long time, but I'm going to tell you. The goal of your giving is worship. The goal of your giving is your worship of God. There's nothing else left that it could be. Because this amount of money doesn't buy enough of anything else to call the guys over and have a talk about it. It's worship. It's your worship of your provider. The goal of your giving is your worship of the God who controls your life, gives you everything you need, holds your breath in His hands. And so when you give, it's not an offering to the church. It's an offering to God. When you give, it's not an offering to some other ministry. It's an offering to God. When you help somebody, it's not an offering to that person who is in need. It's an offering to God. If you're doing it right, that's your goal, and that's what it is. Now, you give it through the church or through a ministry or through a person who is hurting and has a specific need that you step in and provide, but it is given unto the Lord if you're doing it right. It's worship. It's worship. I would even say that your giving is a tremendous indicator of how you're doing in your worship, and maybe even of whether you're worshiping at all. Nothing cuts to the chase quite like money. Nothing. Not in the same way money does. What do you believe about God? Look in your checkbook. What do you believe about God's purpose for your life in this world? Look what you're doing with your money. Where does worship of God fall in your priorities? What do you consider to be a good investment of the resources you have stewardship over? Giving is a tremendous indicator of what you really value, what you really depend on, what you really long for. So many people would say that this woman was foolish to give a gift like this. We get way too pragmatic in our thinking. How's it going to help? It's not that much. You need to keep it. We would spiritualize our criticism of this woman, wouldn't we? If we read this story somewhere besides the pages of the Bible, we would say, that's crazy. We would say she should keep that little bit. It's not enough to help. It's not enough for you, so you ought to keep that and try to put some more with it so that maybe it'll be enough. Beware of the logic. I won't give it because it's not enough. People would say to this lady, oh, God doesn't want you to suffer. Now, hon, you just leave the giving to people who have got a little more. Don't you worry about bringing an offering. Some would even say that maybe this lady's poverty is the result of foolish waste like this gift. And that she's made her bed and she might as well lie in it. I mean, she gave it all away. Now, if she gets two more of these little coins, she's just back to where she was. A great many professing Christians would observe this behavior and think it's foolish if we saw it somewhere besides here. And that kind of thinking is not limited to small amounts of money either. It's entirely possible that you have hundreds of thousands of dollars of net worth and never really give anything that would even come into the category of this woman's gift. Because you think it's all yours? Because you don't count the equity in your home? Because you think it's not enough and you want to get more and put with it so that then you can arrive financially at whatever level you thought you had to, and then you'll give? Because the retirement account doesn't count. I mean, that's not even my money till later. Well, that money's designated for something in my mind, so that doesn't count. Can't give, it's not enough. Well, to all of that, and all of that wells up in everybody, and that's how I know. Those are the temptations we face, aren't they? That's what money does to us if it ever gets a hold of us, isn't it? And to all of that, we just have to respond with the simple truth that in this text, it's this woman's gift that Jesus commends. This woman who gave it all, who gave recklessly, who gave sacrificially. This woman whose worship was so important to her that it didn't matter if she ate that day. This is a different kind of fasting than any of us has probably ever done. The there's something in this lady's worship that is extremely pleasing to God. Something in her that Jesus became excited about, that Jesus called his disciples over to have them understand it, that Jesus preserved for us to understand. And I want you to think about what this lady's gift indicates about her heart and about her thinking. What does it say about her priorities? To put 100% of what you have to live on in the offering, 100% of your liquid assets, with no thought of tomorrow, apparently, or even today. She had to believe that her worship of God was more important than whether she ate or anything else she might have bought with what money she had. She had to believe that her relationship with God was more important than anything in this life. To put everything she had in the offering plate, she had to believe that God would take care of her, either by providing something else or by sustaining her through a period of fasting. She had to believe that this money was more valuable in eternity than it was in this world. To put in 100% of what she had to live on, this woman was throwing herself with wild abandon into the arms of God, believing he would catch her and not let her fall. Picture a little kid from the top of the stairs. Daddy, catch me. And you better. Because they're coming. This is what this woman did. Catch me, I'm coming. Because she knew God wasn't going to drop her. She wasn't depending on herself. She wasn't hoping in what money can buy. She wasn't fixing her affections on the things of this world. Folks, this is worship. And people come up with all sorts of ways to do this. I mean, to avoid doing this. These are my pet peeves. You buy a church bond and you call it giving. You got to get a profit from it, but you call it giving. Or you purchase services that you want. Call that designated giving. I don't want to give. I don't want to trust leadership. I want that. And I'll buy that, but I'm not. People purchase monuments to themselves and call it giving, and they range from brass plaques on things that they wouldn't give but they would buy to buildings that have somebody's name on them. I preached in a church once that was named after somebody besides Jesus. McConnell Memorial Baptist Church. Not far from where you guys live. Somebody thought it was a good idea to take the money. All we got to do is put the name on the place. We'll give you $1 million to build a building if you'll make it a monument. That's a purchase, folks. That's not giving. If there's one thing that self-centered people know how to do, it is give in such a way that it's not really a gift, but it's a purchase. And there are really hundreds of ways to do it. It's not. But I'm telling you this, nobody does what this woman did unless they trust God. People will come up with all kinds of schemes to benefit from their gifts. Nobody does what this woman did unless their heart's right with God. This is your goal of giving. However much you give, whatever the amount is, it's worship. Give it unto the Lord. Whatever you give, this is your objective. This lady worshiped with all she had. We have to admit that's a little intimidating to most of us. All she had. She had to believe that God would take this insignificant amount and make something of it. And he did. Immediately. Guys, come here. This is worship. This is your goal in giving. And giving is a very good indicator of your capacity for worship Now, let me say again, it's not about the amount, but it is about what you're willing to do with the money that God has given you. And sacrificial giving is what Jesus commends here. Everybody else gave out a surplus, and that's okay. It was a free will offering. It's not a bad thing. It's good that they did it. But this sacrificial gift is what he commends, as over against all the other good things that happened that day. Verse 42. No, it's verse 43. Calling his disciples to him, he said to them, "Truly I say to you, this poor widow put in more than all the contributors to the treasury. For they all put in out of their surplus, but she out of her poverty put in all she owned, all she had to live on." Jesus is not criticizing those who gave out of their surplus. 2 Corinthians 9:7 says, "Let each one do just as he has purposed in his heart, not grudgingly or under compulsion." He's not saying that their gifts were not enough to qualify because they were surplus gifts. This is how you give. You give what you want to. There's no compulsion. But there is something more for the person who wants to sacrifice. There is something for that person that the other guy will never get. This lady wanted to bring this. Nobody made her do it. Nobody would have known if she hadn't done it. She wanted to. And if you only give what you'll never miss, then you're going to miss these blessings that this woman obtained. This is just more commendable. This sacrificial giving demonstrates a dependence on God. It's a deeper level of worship. You only give up something significant if you believe there's a payoff. You only give that up if you think there's something better to be had by giving it up. That's how we're made. And this woman believed she was going to get something better than money. And she did. This was what was in her heart, and she brought it, and she gave it. Now, I would ask you to think about what your giving indicates about your worship of God. You don't need to tell anybody, just think about it. It's an important measure of how you worship, and of whether you worship. And so I want you to think about, what does your barometer say about your worship? And let me quickly point out one thing. If your barometer says that you don't worship at all, or that your worship is sporadic and undependable, let me warn you that the solution does not lie in doing what you don't want to do. I'm not trying to get anybody in the headlock to tell you to do something you don't want to do. The solution is in learning to want to. And how do you do that? How do you get what this lady had? You draw near to God. This is your worship. You seek first the kingdom of God and His righteousness. You can't fix a desire not to give by giving. Not very effectively. If it's supposed to be because you want to, and you don't want to, work that out with God. It's an issue you have with Him. You don't trust Him. You don't think He can make more of it. You don't think eternity is more significant than now. There's a problem there somewhere. You got to work that out with Him, and then you'll want to go to Him. But let me also tell you this. If you do want to, but you don't because you're scared, giving will fix that. Do what you want to do, and God will take care of the fear. God will teach you not to fear. God will grow you in that. Do whatever you've purposed in your heart, but don't let fear keep you from doing it. Fear isn't coming from Him. Your giving is worship, so worship. Now, one final thought before we go. Got to say this. Your worship does not begin with money. This is just an indicator of how believers are doing. But that's not where worship starts. This is not what gives you the capacity for worship. Your capacity for worship begins with this Jesus who looked into this woman's heart and knew what was there, and who this very moment is looking into your heart and knows what's there. He knows if you trust him. He knows if you're angry with him. He knows if you're railing against his authority. He knows if you're cherishing sin and hating your maker. He knows the heart. And worship starts with him. So if there's no worship, it isn't a money issue at all. That sermon was for Christians. If there's no worship, you go to this Jesus who knows your heart and you make your peace with him. You ask him to forgive your sins. You believe that his blood shed on the cross is sufficient to pay your debt before God. And you ask him for mercy. You ask him to apply it to you. You humble yourself before him, and he'll save. And then, and only then, can you worship. Pray with me.